We have Bruce live in the locker room in Tallahassee celebrating on the field with the Flores. And I don't know why, but like we were able to run the ball so well in the first half, to, especially to the left side, and then all of a sudden we started to abandon it. And like I said, there is some inconsistency.
How are they going to approach this game? How are they going to beat this Florida State team?
Well, we're going to break you guys. And
okay, that's it. The show is over.
In the story, we're going to break you guys. Look, and I'm joking, but it's
Lord, the climb continues, KB. Oh my
okay.
God!
I am sweating. I am...
Look at my heart. Look.
You know what? Yeah, I have so much to say.
All right, welcome back to Seminole Sideline 365. As always, I am KB, and with me, as always, is the old man. How is it going, old man? It's been a while, but not a lot. We haven't missed a lot, so that is why we've had an extended break. But how is it going? It's good to be back. It's good to be talking some spring football, getting ready for the spring game here. How's it been on your end?
It's been a while, right? You've been sick.
Yeah, but that wasn't. I mean, I've been sick all this time, but I that's why we had to push our last show, because we were going to talk last week about spring questions,
right.
Spring portal, stuff like that. But yeah, I got sick last week.
And yeah, you got sick like the day before, because I was pushing the show out there a little bit, and then I did put out an apology. I knew you tried to do your best to do it, but you know, if you're not feeling it, then you're not feeling it. You know, it's not like we're on some kind of a paid contract here with sponsors of, you know, from Bill's Bait Company. Get down there and buy a dozen shrimp so you can get out there and catch those sea bass. You know, where it's not like, you know, that. But we do have our loyal fans and viewers, and we're sorry. We've missed you, but... It has been a little bit slow, but I'm glad to get back on the air, man. I get stuff to say.
I am too. I do like discussing it, but you know, it's good to have a break, because honestly, I'm not someone who just wants to come on here and talk about BS and make up news. And we're not the ESPN of Florida State football, right? We're not going to break news. We're not going to pretend we have inside sources inside the locker room.
Wait a minute. Maybe I do.
Yeah. Well, I enjoy talking when it's relevant, right? Talking about things that the fans care about. And we're getting back into that time of the year. The spring portal has reopened for 2 weeks. So it started.
Wait a minute. What? Let's talk about something that's very relevant.
That adjusts my life. Yeah,
okay.
Keep talking.
No, it's very relevant, but we're not doing it tonight. But this is what we do, and we're going to do it in the near future. So I want everybody to get ready for it. We do little fundraisers, where any of our super chat money, and we're not asking for it tonight. But if you know, when we do a little fundraiser for good organizations, and this being the Leon County Humane Society. Look at the nice card I got from them from our last fundraiser. And look what they said on there. To our favorite old man. Now, you're part of this, obviously. A big thank you. This is the money that came in from our viewers, and I match everything. We match everything. So if our fans and viewers give us $50, we throw another $50 on it. We send out $100 to great organizations like this, Leon County. And I just wanted to show that these animals, all types, if you're an animal lover, you can't give a better dollar to this situation here. So we're happy to be a loyal supporter of Leon County Humane Society, as well as the Boys and Girls Big Bend Club in Tallahassee area, which, so that's kind of what I'm talking about. In the future, we'll let you know when we're doing that, and everybody appreciates your support. So go ahead, run with it.
Yep. And like I was saying before, it's good to be back talking about relevant items. Spring Portal just opened this past Monday, so it's been a week open. Only relevant news on that front for Florida State is you saw a veteran enter the portal from Florida State. So maybe a little bit surprising depending on where you are, how you look at the room. But Greedy Vance entered his name into the transfer portal. One thing we all have to keep in mind with the transfer portal, and I think it's probably – it's a mixture of two things, especially with the secondary window, with the secondary spring window, is that you have 2 weeks, right? So you have basically for Florida State, you have leading up to the spring game, spring practices, and then you have the week after the spring game, right? And then you kind of have your evaluations and you kind of know where you are. I don't think it's necessarily, and in Greedy Vance's case, I don't know for sure what the case is, but I think it could be one of two things. You know, I was listening to Bud Elliott and them on NOLCast, and that's if I listen to, I don't listen to a lot of Florida State shows, but I feel like they tell it like it is for the most part, with facts, not just speculation. But I think what they brought up, and I do agree with, is that for him, I think it really points back to potentially one, this isn't a young guy. This guy has one more year of football, right? This isn't, you know, a freshman, sophomore, you know, who has multiple years of eligibility left. He's got one more chance at college football, right, to make it matter. He can't put up, you know, if he doesn't feel solid in his position, that he's going to be a solidified starter in that role, in that nickel role, that I believe he was slotted to be competing for against Earl Little Jr., then he's going to bounce. And he's got to probably bounce to a more secondary tier school, you know, whether that's the SEC, the AAC, something like that. He's going to make this final year count. And I don't blame the kid, right? So, you know, the offer sheets that have come out for him so far that he announced, they say he's got 13 offers so far: Vanderbilt, Georgia Tech, Duke, USC, Memphis, Arkansas, Tulane, Virginia Tech, Houston, Alabama. I don't know if Alabama and USC are going to be, if those are solid offers. Once again, he's a kid that has a lot of experience. So, I don't know if he would take that offer, because I don't know if he's going to start right away. But the other offers make sense, like I just said. Virginia Tech, bottom-tier ACC school, mid-tier ACC school. Georgia Tech, same thing. Duke, mid-tier ACC school. Arkansas, mid-tier SEC. You know, so those fits make sense to a guy that needs one more year to show off what he's got if he wants any chance to play at the next level. So it makes total sense to me why this move makes sense. I don't think this move is about money. I don't think this move is about NIL. I think it's a move about experience. And I think it speaks potentially to the fact that Earl Little may have won that position battle, or he feels the pressure that, hey, I may not have this young kid may take this role from me. So what are your thoughts? And it's good too that Florida State hasn't had a lot of guys jump to the portal yet. Now that may change probably after the spring game, as we see where guys, how much playing time guys get and their post evaluations. But what are your initial thoughts?
I think you and I, or you had posted something on Twitter, X, that it wasn't, you said it nicely, it wasn't a huge loss. It's not a game changer. Maybe you sent it to me. I don't remember, on Greedy Vance.
I think I tested you. It's not a game changing loss.
No, and I agree with that. I think Greedy Vance was caught in a depth chart with a lot of talent. Yeah. And I think your opening statement about he needs to make the most of this final year of eligibility in the NFL minor league system, which we call CFB, college football. So I have to agree with you. I don't think he's going out there to make a lot of money, because if he was a starter, I mean a legitimate star starter, Florida State would have worked harder. The battle's end might have worked harder in terms of trying to help him get better money in Tallahassee. I don't think that's the case. No, I don't think it is either. I think he needs to show up and show out. So the question is for him, if he's smart, and that's what we're thinking, and this could be any kid, not just Greedy Vance. but we're talking about Greedy Vance, is that he needs to look at these teams he's getting offers from, see what the rosters are. If the rosters are loaded, like Florida State has talent, a lot of it doesn't have a lot of experience, then he has to look at where do I have the best chance to be a starter or get a hell of a lot of snaps to show up and show out, all right? And that's his best condition. So do I see as a major loss to Florida State? No, I don't. But I see it as this is what, when you jump in the portal, you're trying to show up and show out for another squad to get noticed by the league. That's really where it's at.
Yeah. And so far, and I think that's a good point. He has two visits scheduled so far, like the article says, with USC in April 18th, which is this upcoming weekend, and with Kentucky. If I'm gonna pick which one of those is more likely, I'm gonna say Kentucky, because he is a Louisiana native. I don't know if he wants to go so far away from home his final year. But USC and Kentucky, like I said, is a competing, higher mid-tier SEC program. USC, on the other hand, struggled last year. New coach, I believe, coming in now. Or Lincoln Riley. Yeah, Lincoln Riley, still there. But they have, struggled last year. But they always have a ton of talent. I don't know if he's going
to
go across
the coast. Why would I want to go all the way across the coast to a new program? I got to learn a new defense. I got to compete with others if that situation is not more inviting than it is already at Florida State. He already knows the Florida State system. He should be. That's a big key, because he's been in Florida State for how many? Two seasons?
Yeah, at least two seasons.
Two seasons. So he knows Fuller's situation. He should be just reacting now. He shouldn't have to be thinking. There's a difference. Thinking and reacting is what a new guy does. So now he has to go back out into the system like any player does when they go into portal and learn a different system. And they have to start thinking and reacting more. If he can't find a better play situation than he already has at Florida State, I think it's a stupid move.
Well, I think that's the thing he has to do. He has to find a similar defensive scheme where he can compete for where he can get the starting role right away.
And not think as much. Right?
No, it's not about thinking. It's about what defense most matches what they do at Florida State. I guarantee the starting role.
But my point is, if he can find that one, that's the better system, like you just said, because you don't have to think as much. A four-year player doesn't have to think as much as a first-year player.
You don't have to relearn the system your final year.
And that way, it enhances his reaction and his ability. That he doesn't have to think, where do I go? He knows where to go. So it's very important for him or any other players going into the portal, and there will be more. There's going to be more players like Greedy Vance who leave Florida State. Now, let me say this. I do scan the dial for programs, okay? You know that, and I do. Yeah. And I pick up little things. One of the leading programs coming out of Tallahassee, or the leader, which some people will debate, but one of them, I constantly hear the voices about almost apologetic when they say something that they feel is going to sting a little bit. I don't know why they feel that way.
What do you know mean? What I mean? Like apologetic, like about saying what?
About saying something about a player leaving or, maybe he should go, but we want to say, they're almost an apologetic voice on some of the things they're saying, and that's okay. That's the way they want to present their information. But it's almost like they're doing it so they don't
burn bridges
with their viewers or burn bridges with FSU fans. We're not here to burn bridges. We're not here to make bridges. We're here to communicate as everyday fans who don't do this shit for a living. Okay.
And let's be honest now. Like these players are essentially on quarterly contracts.
There you go.
It's a business now. Well, you have to approach it like you would be if you were talking about the NFL. Right?
KB, you're telling me they're not loyal and true Seminoles and blood. No, guys.
And this isn't about Greedy. I think if you played at Florida State for two and a half years or more, or something like that, now
I think you are, you know, you've done your duty. You've played. This isn't against Greedy at all. I think he's making the right decision for himself.
You're talking in general.
In general. I think we need to get away from, you know, no blooded forever. If you've been here for a season, playing here for a year and they decide to leave, I think we have to get away from calling you a Seminole forever.
You're the greatest ever. Right.
Yeah. I think, you know, guys that commit multiple years, now it needs to be like, if you commit 2 years, 2.5 years to a program, that's like doing 4 years at a program.
Yeah,
like
you're in the old days. You're right.
So that's how I feel about it. I mean, once again, that's not a personal shot at any player in particular, because I know this is a business now. These NIL deals aren't ironclad. They don't make
you. We don't even know what they are, KB.
Well, exactly. And it doesn't even matter about that. Because this is the only NCAA college football is the only league where players are essentially on quarterly deals or less than, you're on year to year, quarter to quarter contracts. Like, you can essentially move 3 to 4 years in your career and almost move every single season. It's the only sport in the world that allows that. And so I think people are having a hard time adjusting to that reality because they want it to be, these players love the school and they're going to be here forever. Right. Da, da, da. And there will be that small percentage of players that do that. I'm not saying that's dead. There will be a small percentage of players who love the school and will grind it out. And like the Kalen DeLoaches and players like that,
I think it's more than a small percentage. I think there's a majority of the team that comes in and will be 4 years. I think it's higher than that. I think it's 75%.
Well, I think there'll be a correction in the market very quickly. I think in the next 3 to 5 years, maybe sooner, there's going to be a correction in the NIL market because, you know, I think, and we're finding, even with some FSU players who have left, they're finding the grass isn't always greener on the other side, or they're not as valuable to the market as they thought they were. And the money isn't always better once you become a free agent. And they wish, you know, or the culture isn't as great at other schools as it is at Florida State, right? That, you know, sometimes taking a little bit less to be with Coach Norvell and that staff and the way they develop you and the way they treat you and coach you up is better than a little bit more money somewhere else where it's not the same, right? And that's no different than, you know, being at a company that develops your skills and develops you, and you may take, you know, 5% less, but you know that in 3 years or 2 years, you'll have the skills to be so much better after that. So I do think there'll be a correction curve in NIL values. And it's like you said, it's going to be a smaller percentage of guys that are going to get the top deals. And the other guys are going to have to be, where do I actually do want to go for 3 years of my career? And then if I prove myself that I'm an all-star, I can then get that big contract my last year or my last 2 years. It's not going to be all these freshmen with 4 stars, 5 stars out of high school moving their sophomore year when they've proven nothing. I think that's the question. Because one, these collectives are going to, the boosters or whoever's supporting these collectives is going to say, why am I paying for guys that have proven nothing yet? Like, there's going to be that pushback at some point. And two, the business NILs, the businesses who are sponsoring these kids are going to realize, am I actually getting an ROI for putting my name associated with a player that most of the country doesn't even know?
Like, how many cars and trucks do I have to give away?
Exactly. Like, where that ROI coming from a marketing background, there is very little ROI that is coming back.
What does that mean?
Return on investment. Very little return on these. I guarantee you, most these are money loss ventures. It's purely brand awareness. But most of the guys that are representing, the car dealerships in Tallahassee or Athens, Georgia, or wherever, nobody's buying a car because Jordan Travis is driving whatever, or because Trey Benson is driving. Like, that's not going to make me go there. I think it's just the thing to do nowadays. And they see it as supporting the athletic program, which that's fine. I get it. That's fine. But I do think at some point people are going to look at their books and say, can we afford to keep doing this? Like, if we're not getting anything back in return in terms of making money off of our sponsorship of players, I do think at some point there will be a correction in the market.
Interesting. What do you think that, like in the NFL, that college football someday could have caps on what the NIL money, each team in the mega conferences would have a cap on how much you can give out to create more equity like the NFL did?
If the NCAA is still around in the future, I think that will be the way that they try to balance competitively balance the league or whatever conferences are still left. Because that is the only way you would be able to competitively balance college football again, is to set, like you said, NIL budgets or, you know, salary caps, essentially. And say, the Division I-A FBS salary cap budget or NIL budget, whatever you want to call it, is going to be your team base is $250K or $1 million. And your collective can raise up to $1 million, but it can only be distributed amongst all your players up to that amount, right? So Jordan Travis or DJ could have had 500,000, but then you only have that other 500K to give out to the rest of your players.
Well, you see, DJU just signed, right? With Battle's End.
Yeah. Which you expect that to happen, right?
Well, I expected it to happen sooner than
it did. But that's the thing with DJ, though. He's one of those players I do not think he was money.
Yeah.
He was shopping around.
I don't
around.
Think so. No,
I really think he was looking for the best fit. Like we talked about. Yep. Who was going – sort of like Greedy Vance in the sense that my final year is here. Who's going to be able to develop me the best to showcase my talent and potentially get me to the highest next level?
And right? You know who just talked about that in an interview? And I didn't watch the whole thing. I caught it. Braden Fisk. Mm-hmm. He was – whoever the hell the interviewer or what it was on, I don't know. I didn't have time to watch it all. But he was talking about his development at Florida State. He was very candid. He goes, I didn't get much attention coming out of high school. I end up at Western Michigan, no diss there. They did the best they could. We weren't getting that much. I wasn't getting that much attention. And I hook up with Florida State. 1 year.
Yeah.
One season. This guy is now projected as an outside first round pick. And potentially no lower than a second round pick. That's how he has developed his game and motivated and hungry. And I have to totally agree. This guy was such an impactful player in one season here at Florida State. And wherever that, I think a lot of it goes to the kid. A lot of it goes to Hagans, you know.
Well, the support staff, like Storms.
The support staff, Storms.
You know those guys are being shaped.
The whole system.
Yeah.
But that's an amazing – you talk about development. I think there is a lot of development going on. When a kid, like back to Greedy Vance, says, okay, it's time for me to take my development and move it forward, I think the coaching staff says, we're happy for you. I know the fan base. I've looked across. Everybody's happy for Greedy and hope he does it. And he'd probably be welcomed back if he decided to come back.
Absolutely. I think there would be no – yeah, we would absolutely welcome back his experience if he was like, decided not to go. But
he's not a troublemaker. He's not switching teams every year.
No, he's free to test the market to see if there is a better – if there is absolutely. That starting role available to him.
Right.
And if not – we will definitely welcome him back to that.
Absolutely. Role. Okay, let's go to spring ball.
Awesome. So spring game is Saturday at
4 o'clock. ACC Net.
In the Doak Campbell renovation underway stadium, which should be interesting to see on TV.
Yeah, you know about that, right? There's been a lot of fan reaction.
There indeed has.
Especially if you were sitting in the seats that got ripped out. Okay. Now I have a few things on this.
Let's talk about the stadium afterward. Let's talk about that after.
We can do that.
I think the biggest questions and the biggest comments going into the spring game there's a couple of questions and we can go back and forth on this. I think one of the biggest topics, I shouldn't say questions, is how will the quarterbacks look? And you know, with Brock and Luke being out, you're basically down to one scholarship quarterback because you lost Kate to the portal. And he went, once again, he went final years. He needs to showcase his starting potential. He goes to Southern Mississippi where he saw this opportunity to be a starter there, which he will be. Because I think now the starter at Southern Miss, who we just played this past season, he's transferring out. So you're down to, with Brock Land and Luke being out for the rest of spring season, you're down to DJ, which is great. From all indications, what I've heard about spring practice, he's been looking great. Storms has put him into really great shape, which is great to hear. And you're down to then Trevor, what is his name? Trevor Jackson is your kid who just signed in January, I believe. He's your walk-on quarterback who's been taking second team snaps since the injuries. And this is a kid that, you know, I can't say was on my radar. But yeah, you have three walk-ons who will probably be playing this Saturday. You'll be seeing a lot of walk-on play, and you'll be seeing probably a lot of Trevor Jackson because they seem to be giving him the leg up in the competition potentially as this walk-on.
Yeah, they have Dylan McNamara, I believe, still in the fold there. But they kind of like, they want to see this Jackson kid.
Yeah.
And I think he was he's not a scholarship kid, is he? Preferred walk-on, and then you got Michael Grant. So you're going to see a lot of these guys. You're going to see they've got to run DJ out there and see. But this is what I was talking about before. DJ's still in a learning mode. He has to learn a new system, a new offense. He's got a ton of experience. I read an article written by one of the Democrat. It was one of the sites, you know, the private sites. And they said, well, you know, they're not going to have Brock Glenn and DJU are competing for the starting position. What is that guy, the author of that article, what is he talking about? I mean, DJU is not here to compete for a starting position.
No, that's
ridiculous. I don't know who these sometimes people are that are writing this. And excuse me, I mean, it's ridiculous to even say that. Why don't they just write an article? It would be very surprising if DJU is not the starting quarterback.
Because that's the thing, it clicks.
Right. And you know who would be the most surprised? Would be his dad. Yeah. Okay. And I'm sure dad would have a hell of a lot to say on any show he could get on and on X, okay? Because DJU is here to lead this football team to an ACC title and into the playoffs. Anything short of that for Mike Norvell in DJU is going to be felt to be unacceptable.
Yeah.
That's the reality. And no one else will say this the way we're saying it, because of fear of something. I don't know, but that is the reality. Well, you know, superstition, you guys shouldn't talk like that. Go to hell. I mean, this is the reality that Mike Norvell, he's a, what is he, $10, $11 million man now. The pressure's on him. And the other thing is, he's doing a hell of a good job. He's bringing in the right players. He's a master of the portal. There's been no doubt. He's going to go out and get a couple of guys, which we can talk about. But the pressure's on him now. Big contract, big expectations. If he doesn't come up with the ACC title and a playoff bid, a playoff spot, it's going to be a disappointing season. Tell me I'm wrong.
No, I don't think you're wrong, but I do think this will be one of the most challenging seasons he's had because there is a lot of change. You lose your quarterback.
Well, you have a change at starting quarterback.
A two-year, which is the most critical role on the team. This is his first real transition in nearly 2 or 3 years, having kind of built the system and really entrusted the system in Jordan Travis's hands, a guy that you could trust to do the right things in the offense, and you really hand over the keys to DJ.
This goes back to my point about DJ, where he's played a lot of ball at two different universities now. Now he's coming to his third. You still have to, now he has to process more up here beyond what he would process if he was stayed at the same university. But
that's not my concern.
Well, okay.
Because he proved he could do it last year. He proved he could go across and play at a very high level and run the system. I think Mike Norvell, the thing is, how open will the offense be? How open will Mike Norvell make the offense for DJ? Like, will he ramp it up quickly, or will, you know, or how fast does it take DJ to learn the offense? And so how far along can the playbook go before he kind of is fully in depth into it? So I think that is the learning curve there. But
I think that's where the quarterback's coach, Mike Norvell, Atkins, if he's still the offensive coordinator, and DJ sit down in the room and say, how comfortable are you with this? Okay, are we going too fast? Are you getting it? Do you feel like it's more reaction than thinking at this point? And so on and so on, because you're exactly right. There are enough playmakers or potential playmakers on this offensive football team to score points. And I'm thinking they should be scoring 32, 33 points plus per game on average.
Well, that's some of my questions come Saturday is, and I think the debate has been, will this be a more run heavy offense coming into next year? And how will we see a glimpse of that come, you know, and normally you'll see more pass, I think, in the spring game, because they want to air it out and they want to see the receivers, and you have a lot of new receivers and a lot of receivers who don't have a lot of catches on the resume.
And people aren't hitting your quarterback.
Yeah. But I think this is an offense, when we get more closer to the fall, we'll be talking about, will this be more of a run first style of offense because of what you lost, what you're going to lose in the draft. You know, you lost your biggest receivers. You lost Jaheim Bell. You lost Keon Coleman. You lost Johnny Wilson. I mean, you lost, and you could throw Trey Benson there for his catching ability, but you know, you lost your four primary playmakers on offense, and Jordan Travis, you lost all your primary playmakers in one draft, and the guys behind them do lack significant play snaps and lack significant, you know, plays on tape that show that they can consistently do these things. And so I don't think it'll show up on Saturday. I don't think they're just going to run the ball 30 times and you're going to see that. But what I want to see is, can these receivers prove it? Because the big notes out of the camp have been, drops have been a frequent theme of the camp. Guys dropping balls.
Yeah, that's not good.
And I think it's not good, but I think it's to be expected with the type of receiver room you have, in terms of guys
who have been there.
And what they knew, they haven't been there. They haven't been there. A lot of them have not been there. And that a lot of these, and with a new quarterback, these guys aren't on the same wavelength yet. And that is the risk that you have going into the season and the transition period. And this is why I think this is the most challenging year probably of Mike Norvell, second most challenging year of Mike Norvell's career.
I agree with you. The production isn't there, but we have been led to believe that there's outstanding potential here.
There has not
been proven yet. Okay. Besides maybe Ja'Kai Douglas, and who else we got? Malik Benson, the transfer.
Once again, these are guys that have less than 500 yards on their career, I believe.
Yeah.
So, production, it's potential versus production. Ja'Kai probably is your most veteran receiver on the team. He flashes, but
yeah, but Ja'Kai Douglas is not a number one type receiver guy. He's more of a gadget.
He's more of a gadget guy.
He's a little bit of a slobster. He's not a Keon Coleman or Johnny Wilson. Those are different types of receivers. I know, but he's more of a gadget guy.
He's a slot receiver. I mean.
He's a gadget guy. But he's good. I think he has some of the best hands probably on the wide receiver roster right now, production wise. Proven wise, he seems to catch everything.
Yeah,
right.
I think and that's the thing I want to see, and that's really the biggest thing I'll be focusing on Saturday is do we see consistency or do we see drops? Because this will be the closest to live action outdoors that we'll see all year until the fall. But we need to see are the rumors or are the notes out of camp true or false. And should we start to be concerned? Because, like you said, we brought in transfers. And I think with the room, the way it's laid out, because you brought in LaWayne McCoy, you brought in Camden Fryer, you brought in some talented freshmen, Landon Thomas.
They're not going to expect to contribute.
Whoever catches the ball consistently, I think will play this year. I don't care if you are a senior or a freshman.
You're saying it's open competition. 100%. If you can run a route, if you can get separation, if you can catch balls consistently, you're going to be on the field a lot. I agree with that. Why wouldn't you be?
Yeah, I think it's going. That is what this room will.
That's why they're there. If I'm doing all that and I'm not seeing the field, I'm going to have a problem with that. I mean, this is a competitive camp now. This is the minor leagues of the NFL. Yeah. Let's say what we've said it all last season. That's what you have here. So if you have a new guy coming in, like a Camden Fryer, Elijah Moore, if any of these guys and all the guys we've mentioned, and they're getting it done, they should be out of play.
Yeah, and I think that's how you have to position this room, is that I don't care if you are...
It's not a seniority system here.
If you are Hakeem Williams, who should be coming, become a star this year from a star, you know, from the star standpoint, whether he was in high school and this is his sophomore year and maturing, or you're Destin Hill, and I know he's banged up right now.
He's banged up.
I don't care. You know, the mentality should be, if you can catch the ball, because that's what DJ needs around it, is guys who are going to hang on to the football. I don't care what they, you know, what they've shown on past tape and a couple of flashes here and there. If they cannot consistently catch the ball, I don't care if they're senior, sophomore, freshman. Get them on the field. And that's how I do believe they will play this room, because there is not a leader in this room outside of maybe Ja'Kai Douglas in terms of veteran and, like you said, having probably the most proven hands on the team. And even though you brought in Malik Benson and you brought in, like you said, a lot of true freshmen.
Well, I think Hakeem Williams, who got a lot of press coming to this football team, you know, a lot of hoorah-rahs, I think Hakeem Williams needs to – he's got an opportunity.
Yeah.
He can spread the field. He's got an opportunity now. And these guys have to take advantage of it. Kentron Portier and Burrell – both interesting guys here.
Burrell's gone, isn't he? He's gone. Is Joshua he? Burrell's gone.
Where did he go? He
transferred. I think he transferred to
where?
He was not going to play. He transferred to...
Okay.
I don't know. I thought he transferred. Someone could correct me if I'm wrong. Yeah. I thought he transferred out.
Okay. Well, you got the point. Deuce Spann, I don't see as 1, 2, or 3 receiver out there. Unless he's really catching the ball well. I see him as the gadget guy again. You know, he can surprise. He's got that trick. He can throw a pass. He can, you know, run the end run, the reverse, a slot screen. You know, he's not a Keon Coleman or a Johnny Wilson replacement. So you're right. It's going to be very interesting. We focused a lot on the wide receivers. It's going to be very interesting. But this spring, they don't call it spring game anymore. It's called a spring showcase. Now, you know, I've advocated since we've had this program, when the hell are we going to start running a spring showcase against a UCF, a Florida A&M, somebody like that, where we come in, we do 7-on-7s, we do special skills. If you want to scrimmage, fine. You know, they scrimmage in Little League football. They scrimmage in high school football against other teams. They scrimmage in the pros against each other in summer camp. College doesn't do that. When the hell are we going to step up and try that? You can put the yellow jerseys on your quarterbacks. You can do other things, and you control the hell out of it. But that's what people want to see. That's what people want to see. That, you know, and it's a and that's really a showcase there. But I don't know. Yeah. Hey, things change, right? Yeah. Things change. Yeah. Maybe that'll change.
A little off topic there, but yes. The other thing I want to see is I think one guy who they're excited about, and I'm frankly excited about, is the way they use Jalen Lucas. Once again, this is a guy, I think he's the brother or cousin. Correct me if I'm wrong.
Yeah, he's getting good.
Ja'Kai Douglas.
Yeah.
And this is the guy, and Mike Norvell said this earlier in the year, is that he does believe that this is one of the fastest teams he's ever had. And I do agree with him based on you have Jacobs, you have Jalen Lucas, who is probably one of the fastest players in college football. But this guy they've been raving about in spring practice.
And you got Roy Dell Williams from Alabama, too.
Yeah. And so I'm excited to see how they use him, because once again, we're talking about deep rooms with And I think the running back room is different in terms of you do have proven production. You lost a lot of production. Trey
but you've got some guys there.
But you got Lawrence Toa-Philly, who flashed a lot last year. He got bigger. I think he's gained another 10 pounds in the offseason.
You got a lot of guys there.
So what I want to see is how do they plan to use all these guys? And once again, I do think this will be a more run-heavy team. They were going to want to establish a run a lot more based on them losing some of the receiving weapons. But I'm excited. I want to see – you know, Cam Davis, Jalen Lucas, you know, how would they rotate to a Philly with Jalen Lucas? How would they use those two guys in tandem, right? Because they are very similar.
To it's a nice problem to have.
But how are they going to rotate? Because I expect Cam Davis to get carries. I expect, you know, Rodell Williams came in to get carries. Kaziah Holmes stayed here to get carries. He's a senior this year. There will either be – there may be attrition. This is a room where – Saturday may tell us who's going to get leave the program.
Well, I wouldn't get too excited. I wouldn't get too excited if you don't see a lot of the portal transfers. I think you'll see some of them. I don't think Coach Novell wants to get a season-ending injury in this showcase. I think you're going to see a lot more testing of freshmen, testing of redshirt sophomores. You know, people who haven't played a lot of ball, I think you're going to see a lot of Cam Davis. I think they really want to see if this guy can be productive. But you're loaded in the running back room. I heard somebody say, well, we maybe need to go out and get another running back.
Who said that?
I'm not going to call out names, but somebody said, go out and get another running back. What? Who the hell would you get? Who would you get? O.J. Simpson? Well, he's dead. Okay, O.J. Simpson did die, if you didn't know that. Unbelievable. Makes you feel old, KB. Yeah, makes you feel old. But who – that's ridiculous. We don't even need to talk about it. The running back room is stacked. Tight ends, Kyle Morlock.
Yeah.
Kyle Morlock, this is his year to show, right?
He needs to develop this offseason.
Has he got two more years?
No, this is last year. I believe redshirt senior – we know he has hands, but he's got to become a better blocker. And so
He had a good season last year. He was on the field a lot.
His blocking was up to snuff. Okay. So I think that's got to get better. Hopefully he's bulked up a little bit, but he caught a couple of good balls there. But it's you lost Biscuit in the offseason we knew what he could do, especially in how you could rotate him around with his size. And so it'll be interesting. It'll be interesting to see how Landon Thomas plays, like you said, freshman, and how much time he gets on Saturday.
They say he's healthy, so he's been hurt a lot.
Because they're saying between him and Jackson West has been on this team, it feels like, for 5 years and not ever played.
West who's been hurt a lot.
Exactly. And this is a guy they talk about, once again, potential, and he shines here and there, but he just never really gets to get on the field.
Well, if it's run heavy,
these are opportunities.
As you suggest, then they need one to two tight ends who can really block down.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
But you're talking about opportunities for guys. You know, you lost Jaheim Bell, you lost Biscuit, you've had a lot of attrition in that tight end room, and we know Norvell still loves to use his tight ends. This is Jackson West's time to push for playing time. This is his make or break. And if he's banged up or he doesn't get a play and it's clear that Landon Thomas has taken his spot, I think he's gone. I just don't see a scenario where if it's clear that Landon Thomas as a true freshman has lapped him in the roster and then Kyle Morlock's ahead of him, I don't see a scenario where a guy like Jackson West would stick around.
Well, that's where you're going to have some of the coaches and Norvell will have some good communication with the players and tell them where they stand. You know what? You can't ever go wrong by having honest, open communication. No one can accuse you of, nobody told me this. I found out on ESPN about this.
Yeah.
No, that's how you find out. Let's go to which I believe is the area that I really focus on, because if you're talking about a heavy run game, then you need a damn effective offensive line play. And I am still not convinced that we are at that level, okay, on the offensive line. I see is it Washington that's banged up again already? He's done for the spring?
I don't know if he's done for the spring. I think he's out for the
– he's not going to play in the showcase.
Out for the game, yeah. He's out for the game.
I think we're still a little unproven there. We have some guys that have a lot of snaps, but do you see anybody in that offensive line room right now that you would say is a top first round, second round NFL draft choice as an offensive lineman?
First or second? No.
Nobody.
I first or second round's tough. I mean, you have to be a really good offensive lineman.
Okay, you got two new guys coming in. We got Terrence Ferguson and Richie Leonard. They're both offensive linemen. Those guys are the portal guys who came in. So could they be the best guys in this room?
I think Terrence Ferguson has a chance to potentially be a starter on the line. It'll be interesting.
He's got two years.
Leonard's going to be a backup.
You think Richie Leonard came here to be a backup?
I don't think he was happy.
He's going to be a starter.
We'll see. I think there's going to be some competition.
He came here to be a starter. He's a senior. This is it. 6'2", 320. I think this guy came here to be a starter.
Everyone comes to be a starter, but that doesn't mean you're guaranteed a spot. No. I mean, so I think the pitch would be, you're going to come here to compete. We're not guaranteeing you anything. So.
No, I agree with that. I agree with that. Same.
Here's the thing I think we have brought in good pieces for competition. And the thing that I think this room will stay the same as it was.
There's a ton of guys in there.
The thing is, they are, from what I see on paper and what they brought in, who they brought back, I expect the level of skill to be about the same. The thing that can increase it is if the younger guys step up and push it over.
Who are those guys you're thinking about?
Julian Armella.
I don't hear anything about him. I don't hear anything about Armella. He seems to be a fan favorite. I'm not hearing anything. This will be his third season, and he's not busting into that rotation.
But we don't know that yet. I'm not going to say I get the latest offensive line competition news.
I'm not hearing anything about it.
Well, I mean, let's see on Saturday. Let's see if he comes out. And I'm not saying Saturday is going to say, you know, they may not put their they should have some of their ones out there who are healthy, because you want to put ones on ones. But that's what I'm saying is, if he's not ready to step up and compete for a spot yet or have rotational, then I don't believe this line will get from last year to this year will get any better. I think those guys, those four or five star guys that you brought in, have to be ready at this point. Who have 2 years underneath their belt of development, they have to be ready to compete or push for a role or be able to rotate in. Because having that rotation or having that ability to come on the field and give a guy a blow or somebody goes down and it be a talent for talent replacement is huge on a 12, 14 game season. But if you don't have it, if those guys are still not ready to step up, then this team is basically where it was last year. In terms of offensive line play, which, you know,
we were 13-0. They were good enough last year.
And that's what I'm saying. It wasn't bad. It wasn't bad. The offensive line play wasn't bad. But it wasn't elite.
I don't get that feeling that we're, you know, elite, like you say. Maybe I expect too much. It never felt dominating.
It came and went. They showed up when they needed to.
And you can look at the run game last year. It wasn't – I don't think it was as good last year as it was before.
Well, some of that can also be on the running back.
We've got a bunch of running backs now. These running backs, if you have an effective offensive line, when I look at the running back room – there's no way that these guys should be getting stuffed at the line of scrimmage every other play.
No, you shouldn't have guys being hit behind the line multiple times.
You know,
no,
especially
you're going to be competing for a national championship, you know, and we're going to give Atkins all these accolades.
I think some these of that's leveling recruited, off a little bit.
Some of these guys he recruited need to start playing. Like this is season four, right? Season four of... some of these guys he recruited 4 years ago, where the hell are they? I feel like some of these guys have been here for 8 years on the line.
I think the three guys I'm kind of watching, the young guys to make, I think there's Armella. Everybody's praising, you know, Otto, you know, that this guy should be the next superstar. And Jalen Early. Those are the ones.
Yeah, Jalen Early and Armella.
Trying to see, are these guys being developed? Now, then if the offensive line struggles – then Coach Atkins is going to have to be held accountable for this.
Absolutely. And we talked about it. We've gone through the roster of offensive line guys that we've recruited and brought in, and we've lost a lot of those recruits too. Like, and you lost some of your transfers as you brought in over the year. You lost Bless Harris to the portal. He went to TCU this offseason.
Yeah.
So you've lost some of that competition that's there. So these guys, Quayshon Sapp is gone. You know, these guys have to be ready to step up.
You know what, KB, too, as fans, too, when we see it on these message boards and news, Florida State signed a guy that's 6'5", 340 pounds. That doesn't mean the guy can play. And he's coming out of Suncoast International Academy. Well, you know, I've looked up some of the schedules these academies play. It's questionable.
Well, remember, IMG playing. Academy played a made-up high school. So,
these are money-making sports operations at the high school level, some of these. And I question some of the competition that these kids are playing about. Because when you're 6'5", 320 pounds, you should be able to push a few guys around, you know? I mean, but the bottom line for me is I hope our offensive line is going to protect DJU. We're going to be able to get the passes out. We're going to have a good, short, effective pass game, but can also spread downfield. And the running backs, a talented group, are going to pile up yards. If we do that, we should be able to score 32, 35 points on average per game, on average, and win a hell of a lot of football games. But the problem is you've got to win. You've got to beat Clemson again. You've got to beat Miami again.
We're going down the different
road. No, but what I'm saying is there is pressure, and it's going to mount as we get to the fall, that anything less than the ACC championship in a playoff spot is unacceptable.
All right. Other positions I'm thinking about and I want to look at, I feel really good about the defense. I think the defense is in a really good spot. You brought in some really, really good players. I mean, you lost a lot, you know. You lost eight or nine players from a really good defense last year. Probably one of the best defenses we've had in the last decade or so. But you also added a lot of good pieces. Marvin Jones Jr., a lot of good potential there. Grady Kelly from Colorado State, good experience there on him. Sione from Oregon State, a lot of good experience from him from Oregon State. Tomewa from West Virginia, a lot of good experience on him, good upside as well. He's got a couple of years left on him. Sean Murphy, a talented potential guy, linebacker room, and then Devontae Brown from Miami, experienced guy. And Earl Little Jr. and Kai Bates being the freshman.
Yeah,
Earl Little
Jr. talent.
High upside. But this is a mixture of talent and experience, which I like. They brought in a lot of high upside guys and a lot of guys that have plug-and-play experience, which I think is good for the room. And then we brought a talented class of defensive backs in, which is great too. Who, once again, if they're ready to go and they're ready to push and play and they look great, throw them in the rotation. But I think the defensive back room is great. The room I'm always concerned with, and they proved me wrong last year. They you know, played out of their mind for the most part last year, was linebacking room. But you lost Tatum Bethune. You lost your leaders. You lost your veterans due to eligibility. They just had nothing. You know, they wouldn't have played another year if they could have, I believe. But Kalen DeLoach, Tatum Bethune are gone. And you almost lost DJ Lundy before.
He saw the light.
Yeah, I think he saw the light.
He was going to Coach Prime in Colorado, but he saw the light for some reason.
So you got him back, which is good from an experience standpoint of knowing the system, having experience.
And can not have to think too much and just react.
Yeah. And so, once again, he's not an all-ACC first team type of guy, but he knows what he's doing and he can make plays. And we've
he's going to play a lot this year. He's going to play a lot.
But around him, like we saw in the Georgia game, and, you know, that was a glorified exhibition, but you were forced to play all these young guys because DJ wasn't there. And your linebackers looked very, very undersized and slow to react. And that was due to them being very inexperienced, right? Justin Cryer, Blake Nicholson, and Omar Graham were thrown into the fire of that game. And so what concerns me is you essentially just brought in Sean Murphy from Alabama, a sophomore. And he has some experience, not a ton. But this is a very green room, in my opinion. Now, the good thing is those three guys I mentioned, Justin, Blake, and Omar, they did get some time last year. They did get some reps in games. not a ton, but they were on the field. It wasn't like they were just they didn't just redshirt the entire year. But these are guys who I think the offseason, if they've built their body back, that was the biggest thing to them. They looked smaller last year in terms of linebacker. They were more athletic built guys, and they needed to build up their body to play at the highest level of the ACC and against the big teams like Georgia if you face them in the playoffs. And so I think it was a great learning curve for them to learn behind guys like Kalen Tatum. But the thing I want to see on Saturday, because these guys I assume will be on the field and should be on the field, is how do they look? Do they look faster this year? Do they look fast on Saturday? Do they look like they're not thinking too much? They're reacting, like you said, reacting to the play versus thinking about the play and where to go. Because I think, you know, being a sophomore is a big jump from being a freshman. Like, you're another year in the system, another year to build things up, learn the playbook, see, watch the film, see where you made mistakes. And I think this will be a big jump for them and see which of these guys is ready to make that jump. But this room does concern me because you are losing a lot of experience and you don't have, you know, the Deloach and Tatum and Bethune who can be the heads of your room, who for the most part were healthy most of the year, and they could head up that room. So that's the defensive position I really want to see and how they play on
Saturday. Well, I agree with just about everything you said. I don't think they can lose anybody to the portal in that room, and I don't think there's anybody in there wants to go. They got great potential to compete and play a lot of snaps.
Yeah.
I think Norvell, if they can find the right guy, Norvell and Fuller are going to try to bring in another linebacker out of the portal. I think they're going to. I think there's going to be some decent talent out there at this, in the portal, and the linebacker room needs attention. I think that is an area that could hurt the Noles. If you figure if one or two of those guys goes down, which they can because they're in the action a lot, then you're really smoked, you know.
And you don't want to force a linebacker like a freshman like Tamir Hickman Collins or Jaden Parrish to have to play right.
No,
you don't want to have to throw them
disaster
in the same situation that you had to throw in Blake and those guys again. Like, you don't want true freshmen having to go into the Clemson game. And it's no offense to them, but these guys need time to build up their body and learn the playbook. Unless these guys were, I mean, Tamir Hickman was a three-star linebacker, who they like. Yeah, but this isn't like a five-star guy who came in at 230, 240, this is a guy that needs time to develop in your system a little bit, right?
Okay, what do you think up front defensively? Up front defensively.
I like our upside, our up front. I like our defensive line. I think once again, you lost a lot, but you retained a lot. You know, you kept Patrick Payton, the back and forth there. You got Joshua Farmer back. Daryl Jackson comes back. He basically was out the entire year, but you got to save his body essentially, right? You got to save him from taking a beating last year, and you basically won out. And then you get the kid, like I said, Sione from Oregon State, ton of experience. So you match him with Patrick Payton, which I really like. And you also get the kid from West Virginia who has a lot of upside that I think could be one of those developmental players that hits his stride once he gets into the Mike Norvell, Coach Storms, Odell system, which is great. And then behind them, you did lose some depth, but you brought in guys like Grady Kelly, another experienced kid. You have Daniel Lyons.
You got Samson. Yeah.
And then Dante Anderson, Brian Turner. Brian Turner's shown some flashes here and there when he can be on the field.
They'll have a good rotation set.
Oh yeah. I think guys will have the potential to show what they have. Marvin Jones Jr. Yes. being one of those guys that you brought in that doesn't have to start right away. He's not gonna be forced in the starting role, but that's what they love about the edge position, right? It's rotational. Keep guys fresh, allow them to be impact players at 100%, right? Let them come on third down, and go full speed, right? And that's what I think building up Marvin Jones's body in the system and let him be a playmaker on the second or third down, match him with Patrick Payton or Sione on the other end. I think they brought in the right pieces, and I think it'll be another dominant defensive line.
Do you think they'll bring in another defensive lineman from the portal?
Unless.
Because they get banged up inside now. They get banged. If they found the right guy, a guy, another guy like a Braden Fisk, which is going to be unusual to find. But if you could bring in a guy like that, that's hungry, motivated, and has shown the ability at wherever he's playing, they might bring that guy in as a rotational piece.
Yeah.
Who has a couple years of development. I'd say a couple years.
Yeah, I think, once again, you're not going to bring in a freshman or
a guy. No. I'm talking a portal guy.
Yeah,
with production.
Yeah, exactly. It would have to be a production portal guy that you think could be a rotational piece. You're not probably gonna find a starter who you're gonna have to pay a ton of money. You have your starters, right? But I agree with you. A somewhat veteran who's looking to develop themselves, and maybe a 2-year guy who can say, okay, once Patrick Payne goes to the NFL next year, and once I'm competing now, developing my body, rotational today, starter tomorrow. I agree with you. If they find that right piece and the dollars make sense. Or maybe the dollars don't have to make sense because you are saying, look at our track record development. You're coming from Western Michigan or Connecticut. You know, if they find one of those guys again, like you said, in case, you know, the Braden Fisk scenario, your money is your development, right? Us developing you for the next level is your investment.
Right.
That's your NIL. And let's do it. So, yeah, I agree with you. They find that type of kid, let's do it.
I don't see many guys on this roster that on the defensive side that I see as this guy's going to leave for another place.
No.
Do you see that?
No.
And the spring showcase is not Patrick Payton. He's not going to go out there and get 5 sacks. And, you know, it doesn't show up that way. I just don't see any guys here that are going to be going into the portal seeking out a big deal on the NIL. I just don't see it. I would see it, maybe losses on the offensive side.
Yeah, I think they've done a great job on retaining talents and positioning and not over-recruiting a position. I think they've balanced the budget the right way, or balanced the roster the right way. The only reason I could see a couple of guys jumping in is to reassess their value.
Who do you think that would be? Are you talking Farmer again, who's kind of played with it a little bit? Patrick Payton?
Once again, it would be scenarios like that where a guy says,
purely for the money,
we've gone through spring. I see where I am on the depth chart. I know I'm a number one. I think I deserve more money. Let me throw my name in there.
And I know I leverage, can come back.
Leverage my position.
Yeah, leverage it with the battle's end is what you're saying.
They have 1 week. And, you know, because they're 1 week.
It's a business. It's a business.
Exactly. And that's why I'm not saying any particular player, but I think that will happen to a lot of teams.
Pissed at a player who does that on Florida State?
Exactly. Especially if you think you've treated them well already.
Would you get pissed as a fan, though?
I think fans will get pissed. I would get.
Or do you see it as a business?
I kind of stop caring, honestly. I just see this as football.
I see it as a business.
I don't get invested in players. I don't care. Like, yeah, exactly. It's a business. I don't get invested in players' feelings and crap.
No, I don't
either.
Not anymore.
It's like you said, it's a business. They're doing it's year to year, it's quarter to quarter.
If it was your brother or your son, I probably would say to them, you're already a number one starter. Okay, so if you want to try to leverage it and get more money here, you know, you're going to probably stay here anyways. Go ahead and try it. Dealing with the PR value factor.
Don't overplay your hand. Know your value.
How do you know what the value is? How do you know?
Because it's no different than going on the job market. You know, people talk to each other. If I'm a defensive end, I can talk to all these guys play 7-on-7 against each other. They have better, tighter networks than we do. You know, they know a guy at Alabama or a kid at West Virginia. And so they can say, we play similar positions and you're number one. I'm on the, how much are you getting paid?
Let me ask you this. Do you feel that these deals, each of these deals at all the universities are all kind of the same in terms of, in terms of, there's a non-disclosure clause where it says you are not eligible or you're not authorized to reveal the numbers or the deal unless we give you approval. You don't think that's happening? Why wouldn't there be more information out there? Because, KB, I don't see any information.
Because then they out-leverage themselves. Because if somebody knows your number, then they know what they have
to do. But you don't think it's in the contract. I think it is in the contract.
No, NDAs are a big – NDAs get nasty. And people don't like – I don't think they're doing that. The reason why the numbers aren't out there, because if somebody knows your number,
haven't you seen haven't you seen NDAs in the business world?
Yes, but have you seen all the people who are suing to get out of their NDAs and how they turn NDAs into a nasty thing now?
I think it is. I think we'd be hearing more numbers, concrete numbers in this NIL world.
That wouldn't make sense, though, for the player to put that
number out there. No, I agree. I wouldn't put mine out there. I wouldn't put mine out there, but I don't see any out there, which if it's not locked down, there'd be stuff floating out there.
But this is why recently this past week, On3 published there. And that's why if you go to the NIL site on On3.
How do they come up with that?
But you notice now on their site, they list NIL values undisclosed. So they don't even give the estimate value anymore. Yeah, so
that,
now it's
locked.
That was
locked. A joke before.
It was a totally.
Who was it? We picked. There was one player on FSU.
$250K.
It's stupid.
So once again,
AJ Duffy. Yeah,
he
I remember that.
$250K for who? That? Who knows?
Come on.
But
he can't even find a team now.
No, he's on San Diego State.
Okay. For now.
But see, now look, athletes, access your NIL evaluation, privately connect with other elite athletes. So this is how they're sharing that information, and this is how they can post. And put that number out there now is through On3.
I'm not convinced.
Giving them the service to max, to put their number out there discreetly and say, this is how much I want to get paid.
If you give your information discreetly to On3, they're going to guard it discreetly. Bullshit. Who would do that? Who would do that? Why would you do that, KB? Why would you give On3 your information?
No, well, it's because they're trying to create a network with themselves and coaches the coach of Montana State is like, oh, I'm looking for a player that's a 3-star and my budget is $250K for my entire roster. Let me see guys that are only looking for $50K. That's what they're trying to build. It's like a budget builder for a roster.
I know.
Because if I'm Syracuse, I only have a roster cash amount budget amount of $300K. I need to be very specific.
Why does an On3? Why does an On3 talk to the heads of the each of the NIL collectives around the country and try to get information that way on ranges? What do you guys see as this? We're trying to help. They'd have to have some reason to say we can help you guys. By doing this,
they are connecting. No, they are. It says it right here. They're connecting this with their collectives.
Hmm.
You can see here if we had access.
Well, they were way off on AJ Duffy. I'll tell you that.
If you had access, you could see here like the Battles End Aztec link. Like you can see their tracker.
I think someday, I don't know when that someday may be, but at some point there's going to be more transparency in this. You know why? Because we're also talking, if you're talking big money, you're talking about taxation, tax records, other shit like this, IRS, that there has to be some degree of transparency out there that somebody's going to get a hold of. Somebody is going to pay off an IRS agent. That's what the On3 should go after. Or some tech at some IRS place and get information.
Those real numbers getting out.
I'm not suggesting criminal activity here on this show, but I'm saying there's no transparency in this whole
thing. Those numbers getting public will just make that correction in the market happen faster. Because if you find out actually that this player is making 50K when should be making 50K or was offered 50K and they're actually making X number or vice versa. Why are we paying all these guys in similar positions the same amount when we could be paying them just the smaller amount? Like, out of whack.
Are you in favor of more transparency or less transparency?
I'm in favor of a correction because I don't think our training should be making $2.8 million in valuation when he's sitting on the bench. Arch Manning's not bringing that much brand value to anybody. No offense to him.
No, but we don't know what he's making. We don't know.
I know he's making at least $1 million on some trading card, well, whatever that story was. But these guys are not bringing $2.8 million worth of value. Right. And that's your valuation.
You know what? And we're being asked, now let's go to the fan piece. We're being asked as fans, because I heard this today from Battleland CEO Ingram Smith on an interview. He said constantly, please come to this event. Please do this event. Please do this. This one's $40. You're being asked to pay for it as a fan.
We're footing the bill.
You're footing the bill for these valuations, and you don't even know how much it is. You're just blindly throwing money into a hat. And I'm telling you what, we know what inflation is in this country. We're not getting into politics. I'm not going there.
Okay, just
but what I'm saying is there's only so much money. Now, your seat has been ripped out of Doak Campbell Stadium. They're putting in premium seats. When you hear the word premium, that means you're going to pay more, all right, for the experience. It's getting so it's pricing the normal family of four out of the stadium. It really is because I read some stuff that the experience that they want to create at Doak Campbell, which is going to be sounds pretty cool, is something like pro stadiums have. It's more of an experience, right? Yeah. Going to the WWE WrestleMania is an experience. It's a show. If you look at what the NFL's doing now when they introduce players and there's lights and shit, it's the experience of the show. It's like a concert. But there's only so much money that fans have in their pocketbooks, given everything that's going on with the inflation, for them to do this, much less if you're traveling out of town, and we know what the hotels cost. It's outrageous what they're doing at these
Tallahassee.
Average and below average hotels in Tallahassee. And I'm not afraid to say it. If a fan doesn't like what we're saying, they can go to another channel. But
that's also the reason why they have to up the value of the stadium. I agree with it. But no, they have to turn it into an experience, because I'm not going to fly into Tallahassee International, pay $500 for a hotel, and then go sit in an old stadium. Like, it needs to feel like a special experience for me to pay essentially $8,000 to $1,000 to go see a game. Like, because if you don't live within 500 miles or, you know, 400 miles of Tallahassee, you're paying almost $1,000 to go to a game.
Easily.
And an older stadium that just isn't, you know, up to par. And I get why they're trying to move it towards a up to date. It's a full day experience. The stadium is, you know, top of the food chain in terms of what you get and what you're paying for, because the hotel prices don't match up to, I mean, the fan experience is great in terms of like the students and noise and stuff like that. So that's like, I hope that doesn't get fully diminished, because I would rather that than all the lights, strobes and crap like that. That if they do away with that and that kills that, I think that'll be worse. But it's so out of whack in terms of, like you said, the hotel prices and what you get in this. And I think they're trying to marry it together and say, look, if you pay these prices, you're going to get a stadium experience that's unlike anything other. So the price is worth it. But you're also right in that they're willing to cut down price, you know, 10,000 seats, because they know they'll double the seats prices, and, you know, they can package it as a premium experience. And
yeah, they're not going to lose money. But you're right. What they're doing is, and this seems to be the trend across the country in both college and pro football, is to reduce the stadium seating down and make this experience thing a more of a premium type of event where they're not going to lose money. They're actually going to make more money by reducing the capacity. Yeah, by reducing the capacity. Because this whole thing with Doak started in 2021 when Michael Alford was the Seminole Booster president and CEO at the time, that it was a $255 million vision to create what he said was, quote, a new era game time experience like pro sports venues, okay? The vision was different seating options, okay? And one of those options is a more upbeat, premium type seating where you could go down and be right behind the bench of the players, walk down, you know, like they have stand ups where you can put your beer and your hot dog, you can wander around. Okay. Another one was different price points. And I don't think those price points are going to be cheaper price points. They're going to be more increase on price points. Yep. And that there were a variety of game experience options there. So he also was quoted as saying they're developing this range of products. He says, quote, a good stadium will have 7 to 10 different seating options. So all of that means to me when I hear this is it's going to be cool when it's done, but it's going to cost you a hell of a lot more money. Because if you think they're just doing it there, you don't think the hotels are going to raise their prices too? Of course they are. You know, a place I used to go to as a college student when I was in Tallahassee back in the 70s, loved it. Everybody, it was a known place. Jim and Milt's Barbecue. Jim and Milt's Barbecue. And where is Jim and Milt's today? It's gone. It's done. Okay? I think you went there once, didn't you go there? And you said it sucked because the ownership had turned over and they drove it into the ground. But this is the price of going. This is what it's going to cost you. And if you're out of town, you better bring a big wad of money. But it looks like it's going to be beautiful. We're not here to be negative. I understand what Alford's saying. Okay, I understand, but it's going to be more of an experience for people that can afford it. And there's going to be less people coming from Tallahassee, probably. It'll be more people coming in from out of the area. That's my thing.
I still disagree with you on that because I don't know if I'm going to be willing to. I'm still not going to be willing. Well, yeah, maybe out of state boosters and their families and stuff like that. And that's how they drive more donations and stuff of that nature. So more hosting and club memberships and business. Because these suites that I was just showing on the screen, those things you can probably, maybe those are just for boosters, but maybe those are types of things that you can sell corporate sponsorships to and say,
of course, hey, of course they're going to do that. Of course they're
going to do that. For the year, and that's how you bring in more revenue, and that funds then that could potentially one day fund the collectives or the boosters and da da da. And you know, that's how you have to, that's how the game is played now. You have to be able to raise money. And yeah,
they're focused on how does the NFL do it? They're the ultimate model.
Well, the NFL doesn't ask their fans to pay their players' salaries, so that's a little bit different.
Well, but
outside of ticket sale, I mean,
yeah, the ticket sales, the refreshment sales,
but it's different. It's still different. They don't have separate collectives that are coming to you with their handout asking for, okay, hey, can you donate $50 to be
no, you're right. You're right. But listen, I think that will eventually go away. I really think the collectives, because the booster club is an outdated type of thing. It was cool because you had players for 4 or 5 years in the system. You got to know them. Yeah. And I'll tell you why. When I was a kid in pro sports, baseball, football, whatever, all the guys before free agency started, they were on the team for 5, 10, 12 years. You knew the players. You knew they'd be there every year. When free agency hit, it changed everything. And today, I can't even keep up with the players anymore. I don't even know where the hell they are. They're in and out 1 or 2 years. College football is going this way.
I just don't understand how NIL can exist without a minimum, like a contract. I just don't know how you can sign money related deals without there being a contract claim. That's the thing with me. NIL's great, players get paid, da da da. But still, the only sports league in the world that I can think of where essentially you are court of the court, you can leave, get out of the contract anytime, sign it. 4 months from now, you're at a new school, new collective.
Yeah,
new
that's college. Where we've gone.
I still understand how there's no like, hey, if you sign this, you have to be here for a minimum of 12 months or two. Like, it would make more sense. And I think more people would tolerate it and embrace it if it was like, okay, if you sign this deal and we're going to pay you X amount, which you can re-up in 12 months from now, but you're locked in for this school for 2 years, unless a coach leaves or something like that. Like, things that are organizational changes. But like, the fact that you can essentially leave in three to four portal windows a year and essentially Now it doesn't matter if you're a grad transfer. It feels like you can leave after any season you want to. It's just the weirdest thing to me because no league, sports league in the world acts like this. Pro, amateur, youth soccer league. God, they have to be on the teams longer than, you know, you have to be on the orange team for at least 4 months, 5 months. You can't transfer. It's the weirdest thing to me.
When do you think that individual players, or could they do it now? Or will there be a court case in the future where I could on my jersey put Bill Ferris Ford because I'm driving one of his trucks? Why couldn't I put that on my jersey like you see in professional soccer overseas or here? I don't follow soccer
those
here.
Are corporate, but those are corporate sponsorships.
Well, what if I have an NIL deal with Bill Jones Chevrolet? I'm driving one of his trucks. I shoot some commercials. I can't wear that on my shirt like a pro golfer does.
That's an
pro golfers
sport.
Have.
That's an individual.
They have an
sport,
endorsement.
Though.
So, yeah. So that can't be an endorsement.
No, because
can I go out and get an endorsement on my own without going through the NIL?
Yeah, but it can't spill over to – because, once again, it's separate, right? The university.
I'm wondering, as a player, why don't I just go out and get my own deals? Why do I need to go through the battle's end?
You could. But I don't know if a 19-year-old wants to spend their time marketing themselves and trying to sign financial deals. I wouldn't want to do that as a 19-year-old. It'd be easier for me to go to a collective that can do it all for me. Why would a 19-year-old?
So you do it for convenience,
like
everything else in this generation.
Well, it's not convenience. That's what the collective does.
Yeah, convenience. DoorDash is a freaking convenience. You're willing to pay for that.
I'm not. I'm sure some kids do it on their own, but it's if a organization is set up to bring you money, that's what I would go with.
Yeah, it's easy.
Because there's nothing locking me into that organization.
I get it.
If they screw me, I can go somewhere else.
Yeah, I get it. Well, I'll tell you what, in your lifetime, not mine, you're going to see a hell of a lot. You're going to see everything we're talking about is probably going to happen. It's all, the structure is coming together just like the NFL model because they are the biggest, probably one of the biggest entertainment industries in this country, the way they're running their show. It's a show.
They have
to be show.
Careful, though. I think
you're talking the NFL has to be careful.
No, the NCAA or college football. I think they have to be not the NCAA because they have no control, but college football, whoever is pulling the strings on all these things, which it's so discombobulated who actually is running the show, whether it's the networks essentially. But you gotta have to be careful. They're at some point is going to have to be structured because I do think you will lose some of your audience if they feel like it has become overly professionalized. Because not all your college football fans watch the NFL, and there's a reason they don't watch the NFL. And, you know, there is much more passion for college football team, for college football, than there is for the NFL. And I think that, you know, there will come a time where you're getting close to crossing that barrier, and I think that's why there needs to be guardrails. There needs to be, you know, people watch college football because there's always the potential for an upset or there's different schemes, there's different. But if this becomes a 2014 college football league, which it's being, you know, closely becoming just the SEC and the Big Ten here soon, if it goes down this road, it confirms, you know, I think I think they may shoot themselves in the foot. The TV networks are going to make a shit ton of money signing this deal. I think, you know, it could backfire on them because the reason why people love college football is because of Saturday uncertainty. You don't know what's going to happen because there's so many different players, so many different teams, so many different teams that play so many different ways. And if you just consolidate that down to 30 super teams, I don't know. You may lose some people. You may lose a lot of people. I don't know. And if it's just, you know, a bunch of guys who are basically playing, you know, NFL football, I don't know.
That's what it is, KB.
No, I get that. But it's still, there is still parity at this point. There is still upsets. There is still inclusion.
Okay.
You still get upsets.
Let's
and that's what people like. But if you take that away and you just go down to Big Ten and versus the SEC every single week and it's just the Power 2, I don't know.
Okay, few comments. Few comments before we call it a night here, but a few comments. First of all, we're, you know, I've been following the court case, okay, the lawsuit. Okay, it's very interesting at this point. Not a lot of movement at this point, except some motions. Basically, Florida State tried to kill the case up in North Carolina that the ACC filed. That didn't happen. And then ACC tried to kill the case in Leon County where Florida State filed. That hasn't happened. Okay, now the judge in Tallahassee did not totally dismiss that. Okay, so that's still ongoing. One of the things, and then the next big thing in Tallahassee will be in Leon County will be April the 22nd, where some they're going to have some more court time. I was reading a lot, and I'm not going to get into nitty gritty like some of the shows do. Here's my feelings: this is going to get settled. Florida State is going to get out. There's no doubt in my mind. I feel 100% they're going to get out. They're not going to ride this shit out to 2036. The big question, as I've been saying, is how much is it going to cost? Because there will be a cost. They're not going to just get to walk out for free. They're not going to be able to leave the limousine for free. No matter how badly they think they're getting screwed, the court, this is a contractual law case, period. Contractual law. Back in, what the hell was it, 2013, I think it was. I had the note here someplace. When Florida State, whoever the hell that was at, Wilcox or somebody, the AD or somebody at Florida State had given, they had the authority, supposedly, to sign off on this deal. They signed a contract. When he signed, he was signing for Florida State that, we are in with you guys. We're going to take the train, and we're good with the grant of rights to 2036. Now, I'm not an insider. Unless Florida State can prove that they held a gun to their head, that they had to sign it, or there was deception that they didn't know about when they signed this deal, right, that there was stuff that they were being deceived about, I think it's going to be difficult for them to walk away from this deal. They're going to have to buy their way out of it, okay? And we know what the penalties are. We know there's a penalty first to withdraw from the conference. That's in the conference. You can leave, but you got to pay, what was it, $156 million or something? You can then walk away. However, you've also signed a grant of rights. This grant of rights you sign goes through 2036. The logic in the contract is, unless you can prove that you were deceived into this contract and so on, then you're going to have to negotiate your way out of this in an out-of-court settlement. Nope. Otherwise, you're going to be held to it. But I think the ACC will say, these guys are bad actors now. We don't want them here. However, they're going to have to pay. They're going to pay a penalty. And Florida State will likely, they're going to say, you signed the deal, you started collecting money from 2013 till 2024, you're going to have to pay a percentage of that back as well. And that's going to be penalty plus.
Yep.
I mean, if I was a judge, I'd be sitting here going, shit, that's why I cut a new, I just fired my lawn guy. Well, you could say, well, what about the contract? There was no contract. It was a no contract deal. Fired him. I just hired a new guy. No contract. All right. So there you go. But when you start signing contracts, you got to know what the hell the language is in there. It's like when you're doing a download and you say, oh, check this off, check this off. Nobody reads that shit. And you go, well, I didn't say I could do that. Go in there and read this shit. It's there. Yeah. So I'm not here. I know Florida State's going to leave, but it's going to cost them some money to do it.
For sure. No, I agree. Okay.
So fans out there, don't get on me about, oh, you're so negative. It's reality. This is how courts look at this shit.
I don't think it's negative. It's not negative unless we don't get out. I don't care if we pay or don't pay. You need to get out regardless. So it's not negative if the goal is we get out. So
yeah, it's not negative. I'm telling you we're going to get out.
Yeah.
Yeah. We're too far down the road. Exactly. Now, the big part that will come is we're moving closer and closer to discovery. Discovery is when each side gets to ask each other for information. And that's when people start to get nervous, okay? That's when people start to get nervous. And generally, that's when people start to go to the settlement table. The judges in these courts don't want to have to settle this shit. They want you guys to figure it out. If you can't figure it out, then you'll bring it to us. We'll figure it out for you. And they hold a lot of power over these cases. They could, if this cannot be settled outside the court, okay, outside the court, then the judges will take it on. And whether it's a judge or a jury or whatever, it's a civil case, it's generally a judge. He will say, I'm going to settle it for you. And you may not like how it gets settled. But since you guys couldn't work it out, I'm going to work it out for you. Go to any civil court and sit in there and you'll see the judges say that. And they're scary as shit. Okay.
Because I don't think I'll be doing that soon.
Well, you don't want to. You don't want to engage in this shit. Okay. Let me tell you this. Quick story. So a good friend of mine, right, is getting hammered by his HOA, his homeowners association. They're sending him letters, legal letters. And finally, they end up all going to court. The first thing the judge says is, Mr. Smith, please show me your letters from the HOA. Mr. Smith says, I don't have them. And the judge goes, what do you mean you don't have them? I threw them away. Boom, case was over. You threw them away? Yeah, quick. These judges will settle this if Florida State and the ACC can't.
Well, like I said, as long as we get out, we get out. That's the biggest goal of them all. So, all right. Well,
it's good to be. One last thing.
God, there's always something else.
Hey, I got my 2010 College World Series baseball shirt on. 2010. The last time the Noles have been in the College World Series is 2019, I believe. So they're having a good year. Link Jarrett went out into the portal, packed the portal, got some great new players, and they're doing well. I think they're 35-6. They're playing the Gators tomorrow night, I think, this weekend, maybe a three-game set. Gators aren't that good this year, so I expect we'll take 2 out of 3 if they're playing 3. That would be good.
No, you talk about playing the Gators.
I think they're playing the Gators tonight or tomorrow or this weekend. Doesn't matter.
They're at Wake Forest this weekend.
Really? Okay. They're having a good season. And hats off to Link Jarrett and the Diamond Boys. They're doing good. The women's softball, don't even have to say about them. They're always having a good season. Their pitching was a little sketchy early on, but I think they're getting that rotation settled down. And baseball or softball, pitching is the key. That's the big key of your winning. The Noles baseball, they do have some offensive power, and Noles women also as well. Soccer, same thing. We've used the portal very well. National championships, what can I say? Basketball.
Okay.
Wait.
I have a lot.
Coach Hamilton. It's all right. I know. We'll do this. Coach Hamilton's in for the final ride. He's got one more year in the contract, okay? AD is going to allow him to. What are you saying? He's gone?
He's done after this year.
That's what I'm saying.
Year. Yeah.
They're not going to buy him out. They're saving their money for the stadium. They're saving their money for the buyout of the ACC. They're not going to buy him out. He's a gentleman and a scholar. He's done a lot for our program, but the time has come. Okay, there's a time for all of us, okay? Maybe my time to leave this program. All right. That maybe the fans think that. Who knows?
All right.
However, that's kind of a quick catch-up, and we do need to do more on the basketball.
We do.
Because they've lost, like, 3 of their top players on a 500 team.
They're not good. They're not good. They didn't get invited. It doesn't matter.
They're going to get killed next year.
Yeah, they're going to get killed next year. They're going to continue to suck until Leonard Hamilton's gone.
It's going to be embarrassing.
Yeah, and that's on the AD for not making the move. So there you go.
But we can dive into that later because there's a lot to talk about and unload there. Not at the end of the program like you wanted to bring up now. So we'll
Is
bring
there
that
anything
up
else we should bring up?
No, that's a lot for tonight. Too many topics to talk about separately. But once again, Saturday,
notes everywhere. PM,
spring game, spring showcase.
4 o'clock.
Excited to see four-star late edition preferred walk-on Trevor Jackson, what he looks like at quarterback. Yeah. Excited to see what these new receivers, these younger receivers do, what these linebackers look like, and then what some of these additions at the defensive line look like, especially these new additions. So a lot to look forward to.
And shout out to Mark Dorfman for joining us tonight. We appreciate it with your comments, Mark.
So have a great Thursday. Especially a great Saturday. Enjoy the game. ACC Network. It should be a fun watch. Good to get back in the saddle with Florida State football. And yeah, we will keep you posted. We'll probably have a recap show next week. One of us will be on, if not both, to talk about what we learned from the spring game. And yeah, have a great rest of your evening. Yeah. Have a great weekend and enjoy the game, y'all. Have a good one. Take care.
Bye-bye. Bye-bye.